The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 2, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Nice to see everybody. Sorry if it's a little cool in here. I think the furnace was working for a little bit and then it stopped perhaps here, so we're not quite up to 69 degrees. Is this too loud? Is the mic okay? Okay, sounds good. Okay. We're trying to use the microphone now more to get the voice to project a little. It's hard to hear in here sometimes. This morning I wanted to talk about the term understanding, and in thinking about what I was to talk about today, I sort of recalled different experiences in life where the feeling of I don't understand comes up. You know, it can come up in a lot of different ways. One example for me is this feeling of I don't understand or I don't get it. I was thinking of experience in high school in math class. I think it was algebra. Sometimes I think the teacher, she would put a equation or a math problem up on the board, and then everybody's sort of doing the math problem at their own desk. And based on how well you studied the material, maybe the prior week, determined how well you could do that equation. So sometimes I wasn't like completely up to speed, prepared. And you can kind of see, you know, the better students are like getting it done, you know, sort of just waiting for the next question. But if you're like, you don't know what's, you just don't understand, you raise your hand and then the teacher comes by and shows you, you know, you got to cancel these out and then carry this over, whatever technique you have there going on. But, you know, so it's basically, I don't understand. And then the feeling is that there's something to figure out. We need to kind of get up to speed on something. But in Buddhism, term understanding is used in a very different way. But I think when we study Buddhism, oftentimes, you know, you'll be in situations where you read a sort of mysterious sounding koan and it just is very obscure sounding. So you get this feeling that, you know, we sort of need to decode it or figure out what it means. And I think there's a legitimate aspect of, you know, hearing the teachings and we're thinking about it conceptually. If we hear a koan, you know, can sort of, it can be an interaction that reflects Buddhist teaching. So, you know, there's a student and teacher talking and they're sort of expressing something. So there is an aspect where, you know, we're using our thinking to understand what's being said there. But ultimately, understanding in Buddhism is not about explaining anything or coming up with an intellectual answer. In Buddhism, actually paying attention is understanding, which is quite different than how we normally think of understanding. And it's not... So paying attention itself is understanding. And it's not necessarily paying attention to understand, sort of like you would in algebra class, you're paying attention to how something's done in order to do something else. Do this in order to get that. Actually paying attention itself is understanding. So with attention, you know, careful attention to each moment, right there is understanding. This is direct understanding. It's maybe like if we want to understand what air is, we're just breathing. So it's something that we already understand. And that's what experience is too. It's something that we already know directly. This talk was the kind of flame that started the topic in my mind was from our Thursday morning study group, which is about how many people are in there? Like 10 or 12, something like that. And Martin Carnegie said a statement, this was a few weeks ago. He's one of the participants in the group. He said, "We don't struggle to understand, we struggle to explain," which I thought was a very striking statement. And it encapsulates the teachings very well. So again, we don't struggle to understand, we struggle to explain. So like we can see this, normally we're trying to understand things by thinking, trying to put things together intellectually, come up with a conceptual answer. Thus, that's where this struggling to explain happens. And it's just something that it's not bad or anything. It's something that we need to do, you know, struggle, or, you know, I don't know, struggle can be a strong word, I guess, but, you know, we're trying to understand. But again, in Buddhism, understanding is to actually recognize that nothing ultimately needs to be explained. Understanding, again, is direct, which is captured by that other part of what Martin said. We don't struggle to understand. This is already direct. So if it's the leaf falling from the tree and gently landing in on the ground, we hear that crinkle of the leaf. Just very definite, nothing to say about that. So this, in reflecting on the whole variety of different experiences that we have in life, it seems like, well, there's a lot of mundane things too in our life. So, you know, how is that awakening? Awakening seems like, you know, it would be something very special, very different. But in Zen, we're always reminding ourselves that the practice is actually about our everyday life. And it is about awakening to just this life, no matter how it shows up. Not only the beautiful things, but, you know, just mundane life in itself. And it makes sense because really the only place that we can awaken is right here in what's happening for ourselves and our life. So when you hear that leaf fall, you know, you're right here. It's just, there's no question at all. Whether it's the leaf falling or you're making a grocery list, you know, here we are exactly, right in this moment. And, I don't know, is it, are the leaves on pace for like schedule? Or are they normally down? I always mix that up for like when they should be down. I see some green leaves up there too. So, and maybe, the leaves falling down is not such a beautiful image of you if you're thinking, okay, now I got to go home and rake. So it's, it is, you know, when you're right there with it, I think that sometimes you can notice, even if there's not a whole lot of wind, it's like a tree just sheds a bunch of leaves at once. I mean, normally a gust will kind of trigger that. But right there, when that happens, you have this complete balance of everything happening right in this moment. And it's happening exactly as it is to show up just like that. And it's not apart from you either. So we experience these things, and it's a complete experience. And I think that also traces back to this quote of Martin's, where it's actually not a struggle. It's just this complete balance of everything is unfolding perfectly. But it's a little tricky because our tendency to want to try to, or we think about our life, try to make sense of our life. There's this enticing aspect of wanting to explain. It's almost like having nice, perfectly fitting explanation is, it's like getting a chocolate donut or something. It's just like very satisfying. There's a pleasure to it in a lot of ways. And, or it's like getting a good grade or getting that equation right in math class. There's a sort of reassurance or, feeling of accomplishment. And, my wife Kate and I went to the Guthrie Theater, a week or so ago and saw a play called Primary Trust. This was a story of a young man, a neurodivergent young man who was dealing with struggles and successes in life. In this case, he worked at a bookstore and then he lost his job because the bookstore was closing. So the play, a big part of the play was he was dealing with the stress of losing his job and then also the the challenge of finding a new job. So he actually found a new job at a bank and then felt the success of getting that job and then actually getting a sort of achievement award from that job. And it was interesting in the play, they would turn the lights off and on sort of like as little segments of time. So the lights would go off as he's walking home sort of with a spring in his step. The lights would be on and then they'd go off again and then they'd come back on and he's looking at, the paperwork for his job or the, I think it was the achievement award. You could tell he was really satisfied with that. And then the lights would go off and go back on, and he was just like celebrating that. And I thought I'd bring that up in the sense that achievements are, finding explanations for things are a real vibrant part of our life. So it's, we can appreciate those things as they happen. And, they're quite wonderful. For a Buddhist understanding, then also is to understand that that way of seeing our life is the relative way of understanding our life. So we can appreciate these wonderful things that are happening. And then Buddhism brings like an understanding, a recognition that we can see how the relative world is working in these ways. It's how things are showing up with their challenges and successes and so forth. And Buddhist understanding is to thoroughly understand what the relative world is, to appreciate what it is, and that there's actually no problem with any of that. So we can live our life and understand this. There's a line from Trusting the Heart Mind, which is an ancient Zen poem. In that line says, object is object for the subject. Subject is subject for the object. So here we have a teaching that shows us that everything is completely conditional and interconnected. So if it's the leaves on the tree, in the air, in everything, or our life experience, you'll find different ways of seeing things. We'll have parts of our life that are set in opposition to each other. There's always this kind of object is object for the subject, subject is subject for the object. So you have this kind of balance of all these relative things. And then Trusting the Heart Mind goes on to say the thoroughgoing relative relativity of these two is originally one emptiness. So this line, I think, is quite helpful in really getting to a deep understanding of how our relative world shows up in this way. Everything is completely interconnected and conditional, but actually this is originally one emptiness. And this relates to this direct understanding that doesn't require figuring anything out. We have this original emptiness. And emptiness is a term that points to a freedom from having to pigeonhole things, basically. So oftentimes we're kind of identifying things, and then what comes along with that is evaluating things, judging things, and so forth. Understanding emptiness is understanding that actually the world shows up and it's actually not frozen and stagnant as our ideas would have us believe. So life is actually not lifeless, it's completely alive. And we don't find, again, stagnant or frozen enduring things as we would otherwise assume. And this relates to understanding as well. Thoroughly understanding the relative world and that there's no problem there, and to actually see the truth of what's going on, this original one emptiness. So whatever shows up, you know, be it a leaf or a migrating bird, as the hearts or the Trusting the Heart Mind poem says later, whatever shows up, each contains with itself the whole world. So whatever experience is coming up, looking at the color of the leaves, this is contains the whole world. So with practice, we turn our attention to something that's always new and fresh. And we are bringing our attention back to the activity of our mind. So just like clouds appear and disappear when we're watching, you know, the activity of our mind, thoughts are appearing and disappearing of their own accord, and we continually settle into this moment. And this is during formal meditation, but also in our everyday life. This can be a practice where we are continually settling into each moment and really devoting our energy to what's happening, devoting our energy to attention. So if it's that you're walking barefoot on a floor, it's to actually feel the floor completely and to know that there's no struggle in that type of, you know, understanding. It's just right there. When we sit, we continually resume awareness, just always coming back. And in doing so, sitting itself is nothing but this single activity. When we're sitting, nothing needs to be explained. It's just the activity, this dynamic working that's happening. The quote also reminded me a little bit of, with that term struggle in there, it made me think about effort a little bit. So I think there is, while practice is a gentle practice and it's not about striving or struggling, I think there's an element of effort that's helpful to kind of think about when we think about practice. There's a quote by Katagiri Roshi. He's a teacher, important teacher who brought to help bring Zen to Minnesota. And when he talked about effort, he described it as not pressing on too strongly and not withdrawing. So effort normally seems like it would be effort is directed towards achieving something. Again, sort of like algebra class, the effort that we put forth is to solve that math problem. And there's something as an achievement. But in Buddhism, we have effort basically as balance.
As what?
As balance.
Balance.
So Katagiri said, not pressing on too strongly and not withdrawing. Or if you think about effort, I was thinking about a seesaw. Those, is that what you call it? In the playground? Yeah.
Yeah.
A teeter-totter. Yeah. Yeah. if you were to stand like right in the middle of that, if both ends are up off the ground, you know, you're standing over the fulcrum and just keeping both sides in the air, you know, it's probably not too difficult. And for me, this is, you know, perhaps a way of understanding that thinking is not needed at all to do something like that, but it's just like a continual attention that we're talking about here. This is the understanding that we're speaking of. It's not about getting anything in particular. It's not like this concentration is not like, what's that trick of magicians like spinning plates on poles, you know? It's not like you need to get all the plates going, and then if all the plates are not going, it's not successful or something like that. It's just a simple process or simple activity of attention. So effort is actually just paying attention. It's not about trying to get something specific. And there's plenty of times during our everyday life where this type of effort, you know, we can bring up this type of effort, basically anything. And I think that's an important thing to remember too. We have a formal practice of sitting where we give our whole self to just being here, but also walking down the sidewalk or whatever we might be doing. So seeing those leaves swirl off the tree and, you know, being caught up, being brought up into the air, you know, this is the endless ways of the world's expression. This is always something brand new showing itself. And I think we can, in this practice, trust that this itself, which is beyond measure, it's beyond explaining. It's always working. So our practice is just to be here for this working. So it's a vivid color that appears on a leaf. You know, this can be a reminder for us that actually what we have is this original emptiness. It's actually the immeasurable expression that's always going on. So whatever shows up in our life can be a reminder of this, and also that this understanding is not about struggling, but it's actually just the effort of paying attention. So it's pretty simple, and I guess that's probably there's sort of a reassuring aspect to that the practice is quite simple. It doesn't make it easy necessarily, because it's pretty easy for those thoughts to pop up and chase down different routes. I was hearing a couple different explanations of people who are reflecting on, they're thinking about something and then wondering how they had got to that point, you know, thinking about it. And so you sort of trace it back. All the things that, like, oh, that, then I thought of that, and then I thought of that. It's pretty amazing how
We go off on these excursions in our mind. And none of that, again, is a problem at all. That's just something that we can pay attention to as it's happening. And that's part of this attention that we can bring to our life. So I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments at all about the talk, or you can talk about the candy that you got last night if you want.
You mean the candy I stole from my kid?
Oh, okay. Which ones do you take?
I go for the sour. I go for the sour stuff. I want the sweet tarts. I want the gummy bears.
Yeah, sure.
Got a little microphone for you.
Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, so people on Zoom can hear you.
This is more for really anybody. I'm here because I am doing a reflection paper on a different faith than what I normally am in. And I've been going to and taking my peers to Dharma recovery meetings. So that's kind of why I chose Buddhism. But I see so many different people in here, and I'm just kind of curious as to what brought you into Buddhism.
Sure.
If anybody's willing to answer that.
Yeah, I could start. Anybody else can chime in. For me, I think it is definitely different, I think, for different people when you ask them. But for me, it was maybe a little bit on the side of just curious about how this is all happening. You know, what's going on here? Some of the world, but then that kind of brought in everything about right and wrong, morality, different things. So ironically, it was probably to search an explanation for these questions I had, or if it was a struggle maybe that's happening in life, why is this happening, or why do people suffer? And then I think at some point for me, I recognized that I was searching for truth, in essence. These questions, basically, what's true and real? And then at some point, I recognized that what I was actually searching for is something that is beyond question. And then in this tradition, there's great focus on looking at what is beyond question. And in Buddhism, that is presented as actually just direct experience. And then from there, it kind of solved, or it brought light to moral questions. And in that case, it's like understanding this activity of thinking that's going on in our minds. For me, I recognized that that was the source of trouble that I was creating in the world. So like the thinking would happen, then I could see that, oh, of course, this thinking is according to how I want things to happen. And then I'm trying to control things, and then problems happen. So I explained the different questions that I had, or it's sort of brought to light the original reason why I was kind of my questions and to begin with. So, but yeah, sorry for a long-winded answer there. Anybody else have any reflections? It's a great question.
I'm going to kind of share. I know I came to sort of meditation in general as sort of like a mindfulness practice at first, especially with, like anxiety and just, caring for my own mental health. And then I found a lot of reassurance, is the word I'll go with, in, why am I feeling anxiety and stress, and insert any, hard, difficult word there, in terms of sort of the four noble truths with like suffering, and just sort of a reassurance that it's always there and everyone feels it and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think Jed's talk today about kind of like understanding, just really enjoyed sort of getting a deeper understanding of, you know, not only myself, but also, you know, what suffering means.
I'll just let you know, if you are able, at the end of the talk, we go downstairs and there's tea and coffee and snacks. So, I mean, certainly you can talk to people there, too. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a great question, though.
Yeah.
Something to reflect on, I think. In particular, we have a series, the foundational teachings here, and the Four Noble Truths really gets to that question in terms of how the Buddha's journey played out. So his question was about suffering, basically. I mean, it was kind of, there's many different facets of why he sort of went forth in his quest, basically. But when we look at the Four Noble Truths, we see that journey coming to a resolution, and the Buddha identifying craving as the source of suffering. And this is, of course, very aligned with understanding the human situation, this suffering that arises in very subtle ways. It can be suffering that you normally think of as things that I don't like, but then it also encompasses maybe like we have everything that we need, maybe we have more money that we need, and we're sort of maybe taking more than our fair share. There's suffering in that too. But that person may think, oh, everything's great. You know, so it's what the Buddha uncovered there was something of exceeding subtlety, which, so everything in Buddhism builds out of the Four Noble Truths in that way. So you can't interview the Buddha himself, but you can read the story. It covers that question quite a bit. Any other questions or? Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.